You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
What's going on, everyone? Taylor Kyles here for CLNS Media, coming at you with another episode of Pats Daily, brought to you by our good friends at Prize Picks, the exclusive daily fantasy partner of CLNS Media. I'm not going to lie, y'all. I'm really excited today. Obviously, NFL draft week finally upon us. Patriots days away from completing the much-anticipated quarterback reset. So give us a little insight into what it's like not only to play quarterback in the NFL, but to be the face of a franchise. I am joined by former Heisman winner, number two overall pick, rookie of the year, pro bowler, and current ESPN analyst and host of RG3 and the Once podcast, Robert Griffin III. Robert, how you doing, man? Thank you for coming on.
Hey, man, I'm doing great. I appreciate the intro. I got to take you with me everywhere, man. That was a good intro right there.
Right, man, I'm about it. I got a little practice with this whole podcast gig, but well-deserved, man, well-deserved. So, again, thank you so much for coming on. Busiest part of the year. Also, I got to give you the shout-out. You got the Dragon Ball Z quarterback comps. Really, really like those. Now, I asked, we can't get a sneak peek. I was asking for Drake May, but it's coming out soon. But I do want to give you a little shout-out for that and let us know what the idea was behind that. Because you got JJ and Penix out. We'll talk about them later. But super interesting idea that I'm sure a lot of anime nerds and manga nerds are really excited about.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of people are afraid to show who they really are. And that's one of the things I've always tried to do in this journey on TV. It's my third year in TV, coming to a close of my third year. And I always believe you create the content you want to create, and then people will accept you. And if they don't, then those aren't the right people. So the Dragon Ball Z comps, I just got tired of everybody saying, this quarterback's like this guy, and he's like this guy. I hate comps. I absolutely hate him because I feel like everybody is their own guy. Mm-hmm. So Dragon Ball Z is something I love. Mm-hmm. Football is something I love. And I had actually had this idea before Akira Toriyama, the creator of Dragon Ball, passed away. Mm-hmm. And I was just going to do it, you know, I don't want to say like halfway. Mm-hmm. But when he passed away, I was like, I really want to honor the guy because I grew up on Dragon Ball Z. So I put all my thought process into the characters that I selected. And I got Bo Nix is coming out today as well. And then tomorrow, Drake May will be out tomorrow. And then I'll have a couple other guys that drop on Wednesday. So it's really a passion project for me. The true fans understand the connection and the reference. Right. So I'm trying to bring both worlds together and have fun with it.
I appreciate it. I mean, obviously, fellow Funko Pop lovers, when it comes to being yourself, showing your personality, I can definitely say I appreciate it very much. I know you don't like the comp stuff. We'll get into that, but I'm more about your opinion, not necessarily, you know, just what we're hearing. But first, I want to start off with some Patriots stuff. Now, Going back to your rookie year with Washington, you talk about the staff. You got some heavy hitters on the coaching staff. So offensive coordinator, Kyle Shanahan, quarterbacks, Matt LaFleur, tight end, Sean McVay, offensive assistant, Mike McDaniels, and then DB's coach, Raheem Morris, defensive assistant, Bobby Sloak, which might surprise some people. That's obviously offensive coordinator for the Texans, who are absolutely killing it. And then when you look at the supporting cast, you had Trent Williams, Alfred Morris, and you were all Pro Bowlers in your first season behind a dominant run game. And then you had some really quality veteran receivers like Pierre Garçon, Santana Moss, and Chris Cooley. Now for the Patriots, this is a brand new offensive cast. Defensive coach is pretty much the same. And then you look at the offense, they re-signed a bunch of their guys, Hunter Henry, Kendrick Bourne, like the guys who were really putting in the work over the past few seasons, but not a lot of firepower. So from your perspective, before we get into the whole quarterback discussion, do you think they have what it takes to support a young quarterback if this were a guy who was going to start from day one or early on in the rookie season?
The simple answer to that is no, yes. And I say that because Kendrick Bourne, to me, is one of the most underrated wide receivers in the NFL. I have a good relationship with Kendrick, and I believe that he's like a quarterback's best friend. You know, you talk about with the tight ends, with the Kelce's and Greg Olson's and Gronkowski's, like, oh, he's a quarterback security blanket. It's like, they are. They were. Bourne is a quarterback's best friend because he's going to be where he's supposed to be, when he's supposed to be there. He separates, and he catches the football. And I know that sounds like what a receiver is supposed to do, but it's not always that simple. You got to have a guy that knows when he's open, knows how to manage coverages, and knows how to put the work in every single day to get that confidence from the quarterback. So when I look at the Patriots wide receiving core, I see a bunch of guys that are twos, right? You got Bourne, you got Juju Smith-Schuster, you got Demario Douglas, you got Tyquan Thornton. Like, they need a one.
Yeah.
Like a bona fide that dude. Because the rest of them, they're doing their job, and you need that on a team. You got Hunter Henry at tight end. You got Austin Hooper at tight end. Like, this team is not barren of talent. Mm-hmm. And people try to paint it that way. It's because they don't have a Malik Nabers. You know, it's because they don't have a Marvin Harrison Jr. or a Roma Dunze. And those guys don't just grow on trees. Mm-hmm. So I don't feel like the roster is as barren as people make it seem. And you mentioned Trent Williams and Alfred Morris and Pierre Garçon and Santana Moss. We had Santana Moss at the end of his career. He was my security blanket. I felt like almost every other catch he had was a touchdown. And when you go back and you look at the season, I think he had about 20 to 30 catches, but they were all impactful catches. And Alfred was a 6th-round pick. You know, we had Roy Helou Jr. and Evan Royster and Tim Hightower all in front of him, and he won the job in part because those guys got banged up in the preseason, but he also earned it, you know? Mm-hmm. So what we did my rookie year in 2012 wasn't just a byproduct of, hey, here comes the Heisman Trophy winner, and he takes him off into the sunset. Like, D'Angelo Hall was a veteran on that team. London Fletcher was a veteran linebacker on that team. We had Chris Cooley at tight end. So that veteran experience made me as a rookie want to come in and like prove to those guys like I belonged, and then I could get the job done for them, because I knew I potentially had more years ahead of me than they did, and they didn't have time to wait. So I look at the Patriots team and I see Matthew Judon, and I know Judon's not trying to wait 3 years to go win a Super Bowl.
Right.
I know that the fan base isn't trying to wait 3 years to go back to the playoffs and win a Super Bowl. So to answer your question, it's a no because they don't have that one at wideout. Mm-hmm. But it's a yes because if you bring in a young QB, you can sit him behind Jacoby Brissett for a year while you build out your roster. And if he has to play, he has to play, right? Mm-hmm. It is what it is. Look at Justin Herbert when he was with the Chargers. Right. He sat at first behind Tyrod Taylor. People don't remember that, but he did. And then he played because Tyrod got hurt. So I'm not as down on the Patriots as everybody else has been, but I understand that they do need a true number one wide receiver.
And honestly, you hit on a lot of the same points Elliot Wolf mentioned. Like last week, I asked him, you got a lot of like Z's and slots on your roster, but what about an X? And he's like, yeah, no, you're right. Do we have that guy who can win consistently on the backside of a 3x1? No, we do not. And he's being very real about it.
Everyone will feel so much better about the Patriots roster if they had a number one receiver.
Yep.
Because then you look and you be like, oh, okay. We got Juju Super Bowl champ. Okay. Oh, we got Demario Douglas who's killing him in the slot. All right. Mm-hmm. You got two tight ends that have done damage in this league.
Right.
It's all jaded because they don't have a quarterback. And all respect to Jacoby Brissett. I sometimes call him Jacoby Brisket because he's cooking out there. But all due respect to him, they don't have that QB.
Yeah.
So people are like, oh, man, we don't got a quarterback, man. We don't got a number one receiver. What are we going to do? It's like your roster is not that far off. There are a couple pieces, and I think they can get a number one receiver and a quarterback in this draft because this receiver class is so deep. I think they can still find that.
So we're going to get into a quarterback discussion, but you said that, so I got to ask. Are there any receivers that stand out to you who could be that kind of security blanket or that true difference maker for the Patriots who, again, do need more of that X, you know, backside one-on-one merchant?
Yeah. Yeah, it's obviously the names that are out there at the top. The top three guys, they are bona fide superstars. Mm-hmm. I have called games for two of them. Marvin Harrison Jr., I didn't get a chance to call Ohio State, Big Ten. ESPN doesn't have Big Ten. But he's an animal, right? I've known about him for a very long time. Roma Doomsday called two games for him over the past 2 years. And Malik Nabers, I called three games for him just this past year. So I got a healthy dosage.
It's a fun year. Okay.
I said about Malik, the play doesn't start until he gets the ball. Mm-hmm. That's the kind of player he is. Rome can do a little bit of everything. He can play in the slot. He can play backside on his own. He can play at the Z. He can punt return. But Marvin is the one that everyone feels like is the complete package. But when you get past those guys, now you're talking about guys that have elite traits. Brian Thomas Jr. He has some elite traits, okay? Keon Coleman. I called his game Florida State versus Syracuse. Mm-hmm. Deion Babers is no longer the head coach of Syracuse, but he was my receiver coach when I was at Baylor.
I was an intern for Hughes, actually, in football, so there we go.
So after the game, he said to the media, he said, you know, Keon Coleman, yeah, God was showing off when he made him. That's the type of athletes that are in this draft. Yeah. Even a guy like Xavier Leggett at South Carolina. If people took the time to go watch his tape, you'd be like, hey, he should be in the top 10 because he's that special of a player. So I think that there's going to be some guys for the Patriots. If they do go quarterback at three, I think there's some guys that they can get in the second, third round that you could look at and be like, hey, this guy might be a number one wide receiver. Now, the fans might not feel great about it because you didn't get him in the beginning, but it all depends on who they're trying to draft. I did see something today through the grapevine that they might be trying to go get Michael Penix Jr.
Yeah.
And because that people might be a little bit down on Penix because of his injury history, they could trade out of three and actually get some picks to not only get Penix, but also get one of those number one wide receivers. So I think that would be the best case scenario. They need a starting quarterback and they need a number one wideout. That number one wideout for the fans and for them, just how they feel, is probably not going to be in the second or third round. Find a way to get two guys in one round.
You got me fired up, man. Keon Coleman, I feel like he's a bit of an anomaly. He might not be a prototypical X, but I feel like people, especially in New England, a little trauma there. You compare him to N'Keal Harry. And I'm like, no. These are very different guys. Much more threatening in his stem. Guys better in space. Legit, like, jump ball winner, but it's not all he is. So I love Keon Coleman. And Xavier Leggett is my dude, man. I've been talking about this guy for months. I know that, you know, people are critical because he had the late breakout. But you look at the history and his whole story, how he got to where he is, on top of the talent that he showed last season on a South Carolina offense. People talk about Drake May didn't have a great supporting cast, and that's fair. I mean, Spencer Rattler and Xavier Leggett were in a completely different category. So I know this is a quarterback show, but I was very happy to hear you say those names. Those have been two of my guys in this process. But moving on to the quarterback discussion. Yep. So you had a very unique experience in the NFL. Obviously, you were top pick, expected to come in and be the face of a franchise at a very young age. You were also there when Lamar Jackson was drafted with the Ravens. Another guy won the Heisman, came in with high expectations, and really had to go out and show it pretty relatively early on in his career. Obviously, Joe Flacco started out, but at the same time, he ended up playing at a certain point. So what was that like on both ends of the spectrum, both being the guy coming in with all those expectations, but also being a guy who'd been through that experience and then got to see that from a different perspective and kind of help groom him as a young player?
Yeah, for me personally, my journey in the NFL is why I do what I do now. You know, and I don't mean just like being on TV. I just mean like the way I attack, the way that I analyze, it's because I've seen it from so many different sides. So to come in as a rookie into Washington with a team that was laden with veteran guys that were, I considered legends, you know? Like when I first saw Santana Moss, I was like starstruck. Because like he went to the U, and I wanted to go to the U. And I'm like, hey, what's up? But to do that in year one and have success and win the division and go to the playoffs and feel that, and then to feel the emptiness of being out of the league in 2017, to feel the emptiness of not playing a snap in 2015 while still on the team that you were considered to be the franchise quarterback for. Like, all of those experiences didn't make me bitter. They made me better. They let me see things from a different perspective. So when you flash forward to 2018 with Lamar, Lamar gets drafted. I had gotten signed a month or a few months earlier before he got drafted. And they tell me, you're going to come in, you can compete with Joe, we need someone to push him. I'm like, all right, cool, no problem. It's Joe Flacco, he's Super Bowl champion. Like, okay, you know what I'm saying? Like, I understood. I knew what my role was. When they drafted Lamar, my guy Steve Smith said something funny. And he said, because I put out a tweet and I said, man, I can't wait to work with you. You know, we're going to be grinding together, do this thing, and really have a lot of fun. And he responded on air to my tweet. And then he was like, you ain't going to be there. You cut. And I'm like, you know, everyone laughed at it. But I actually got a call from my quarterback coach after that. And he told me, you know, thank you for putting out that tweet. And that's all he said. And I'm like, are you telling me that tweet saved my job? Like, because the way I viewed it for Lamar was, Lamar's his own man. And I try to tell people that all the time. Like, Lamar is a very strong-willed individual. He wants to prove everybody wrong, but more so he wants to prove himself right and take care of his family. So when he got there and I got a chance to work with him, I appreciated it because I didn't have that when I was in D.C. I didn't have that environment. I didn't have a guy that looked like me, that played like me, that could help me navigate some of the things that I ended up running into. So I tried to be that and was that for Lamar. And to see the way the team embraced him, and I don't mean the locker room. The locker room is the locker room. The locker room will embrace anybody that the coaches embrace. Right. The locker room will embrace anybody that comes in and puts in the work. I did that when I was in Washington. But the way the team embraced Lamar, the way he talks, the way he wears his hair, the way that he dresses, the way that he communicates, what he's good at, what he's not good at, right? They did everything and catered everything to Lamar and were not afraid to do it. And I got to see an organization in the Ravens that truly cared about the players, about the identity, and about what was expected. So that was awesome for me to see, because in my other two stops, I didn't see that. I thought that this is what the NFL is. But really what it can be, it can be as great as what the Baltimore Ravens were and are. And that's why I have a lot of love for the Ravens. Even though people say, you got drafted by Washington, it's like, yeah, I got drafted by Washington. I played for Cleveland, I played for the Ravens. But Ravens fans, we have a special connection because I appreciate being able to experience that. So as much as some people have said, hey, you did this for Lamar, you did that for Lamar, it's like, nah, Lamar's his own guy. He won two MVPs. I ain't no MVPs. He did that. He threw them touchdowns. He ran that touchdown where he did a little spin-a-rooney against the Bengals. You know what I'm saying? I ain't do that. But I'm very appreciative of being able to have that experience because it shaped so much of my life, and I'm really thankful for it.
Speaking of Lamar, one thing watching him, like you said, there's not a lot of quarterbacks that look like Lamar that care themselves the way Lamar does. It was amazing for me to see. And then to see, obviously, you know, people say certain things. But then to see, like you said, how the organization always supported him and it really seemed like they had his back. Just from an outsider's perspective, it really was very encouraging to see. So it's really cool to hear that was what it was like also from your perspective. And you also talk about what your experience was like when you were younger. You were part of a double-dipping quarterback, which you don't really see for a guy who's taken to be the franchise, especially because then you're like, Kirk Cousins still killing it. It wasn't like a guy where it's like, oh, no, he's – clearly, just going to be like, he was still a talented guy. So the Patriots, you never know. Like, maybe they hedged their bet or something like that. You know, teams or businesses, yada, yada, yada. What was that experience like for you to come in? And again, top pick, you seem like you're the guy, but then they also get somebody in a spot where you're like, hey, you know, this might be funky.
Like, I tell you this all the time. Me and Kirk, like, we shared a burrito at our rookie mini camp, you know what I'm saying? Like, we're breaking bread together. Like, I don't have any beef towards Kirk Cousins. Mm-hmm. I don't think he has any beef towards me. It was an awkward situation, but it was awkward not because he was a bad guy or whatever. It was awkward because you then found out that there was a problem. And that problem was within the organization between the owner and the head coach. That's an odd spot to be put in as a rookie. So, and when I've done the draft and covered the draft the last four years, I've always said to people, when your team, say it's the Patriots, if the coach wants a guy and the GM wants a guy and the owner wants a guy, don't draft any of them.
Yeah.
Because they have to be in one accord. You know what I'm saying? Like, you talk about the family, right? Mom, dad. Mom tells the kid, you can't have something. What's the kid do? They go to dad.
Yep.
Hey, dad, can I have da-da-da-da? You don't even know. Mom said no, so you say yes. Now there's a problem in the house, okay? And that's what you don't want for a young rookie quarterback. You want everyone to be on the same page. And if there's any doubt, don't draft. Trade out of it. Let someone else take care of that. Because until you guys are all on the same page, nothing's ever going to work. And it did work for us in Washington that first year. I'm not oblivious to that. We won 7 games down the stretch and won the division. But it didn't work after that, like clockwork. Because if there's grumblings or grinding somewhere in the building where somebody wants this and someone else wants that, no one's going to be on the same page. I don't ever want that for a rookie quarterback. It's something that I don't want them to have to go through, and it's not good for the team either. So if the Patriots are having their doubts about any of the top QBs, trade out of the pick. Don't let the pressure from the public make you pick a guy that you don't want. Mm-hmm. Don't let the pressure from some external forces make you pick a guy that you don't want. And that's kind of what I learned from that experience. I'm not bitter about it. I've gotten better from it. Every experience that I've had in my life has made me who I am today. So I just don't want other guys to have to go through that because I have the foresight and the experience. Hindsight's 20/20. Mm-hmm. I could have changed anything anyway, right? I just got drafted there. But I want everybody to have a fair, not even a fair, because fair is not the right word. We both know life's not fair. I want them to have the opportunity to realize their potential. And you can't do that in an organization that's not on the same page.
This is honestly a really timely discussion because the Patriots, it was reported today that, you know, ownership might be kind of getting involved in the decision-making process with the top pick. Hoping it's not true. I'm hoping there's, you know, some kind of smoke or whatever to that, because Jerod Mayo and Elliott Wolf have sounded like they're in lockstep, where Elliott Wolf has been a part of, obviously, his father, Ron Wolf, and seen the success the Packers have had in that front office where you listen to everyone, you embrace different opinions, but at the end of the day, when you were in a leadership position, you keep what you want to yourself, and you do try to stay open-minded, but at the end of the day, you have your little cabal. It sounds like that's Mayo, Matt Groh, and then Elliott Wolf, where they ultimately are the ones who make the decision. So you hope that they are in lockstep, and whatever they do is something that the organization can get behind, and you don't have that situation where there's people on, you know, different ends of the spectrum who are kind of fighting for different things.
And I would say this with Robert Kraft. Do you guys call him Bob? You call him Bob Kraft?
I don't call him Bob.
I don't know.
Not me. I'm second year out here. I'm not calling him Bob. That is Mr. Robert Kraft to me.
Robert Kraft. Okay, so Robert Kraft has won 6 Super Bowls. So he is going to – I don't know if he's in the conversations or whatever. You listen to everybody. But he's going to have an opinion on who he wants. And he clearly put Elliott Wolf – and Mayo in position because that's who he wanted. So you have to listen to him in a sense, not just because he's the owner of the team, but because he knows what it looks like. And he knows what it takes to win in New England. And that might not be a certain guy or a certain skill set or a certain whatever. He might just have a gut feeling. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like,
he talks about that too.
I had this gut feeling when we drafted Tom Brady, and I'm having that same feeling about him. Like, draft him. Yep. Everybody get on board. So I don't want to make it seem or sound like either me or you are saying, hey, they're not on the same page. It's more like when you come in and you haven't done something, it's a lot harder for people to jump on board with you. But when you have won 6 of them bad boys, it's a little bit easier for people to say, you know what, I'm going to trust this guy. He's seen it. He knows what it takes.
Get in on the playoff action and win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks as you and the world's best players take the game to a new level during basketball's postseason. You can win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks with as little as 4 correct picks. You can turn $10 into $1,000 with basketball and hockey entries today on Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. Prize Picks is the best way to get action on sports in more than 30 states across the country, including California, Texas, and Georgia. I personally love Prize Picks because they're super easy to use, easy to navigate, and they offer injury insurance, so your entries stay live even if one of your players gets injured. Quick withdrawals, easy gameplay, and an enormous selection of players and stat types are what make Prize Picks the number one fantasy sports app. Download the app today and use the code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100. That's code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy.
All right, so let's get into that quarterback discussion. Now, we got to use the C word, the comps word. Now, obviously, you and Jaden Daniels, Heisman winners, dual threats, very successful at the college level, and obviously both going to be taken, possibly both taken second overall. We're not sure yet, but, of course, that's led to a lot of comparisons. People are saying your guys' games are pretty similar. So I'm curious, from your perspective, do you see any overlap? Do you think there's anything to those comps?
Yeah, like I've answered this question a bunch over the past couple of weeks, and it's not a problem. It's one of the deals of like there's a bunch of people because Jaden is tied to the Commanders, right? There's a bunch of guys, Drake May, JJ McCarthy, but Jaden has been the one that most people said we think they're gonna pick this guy. So there's some people that are like, oh man, we're afraid of that because he reminds us of you. And I'm like, okay. Well, what is Drake May's skill set? Athletic, strong arm, can make off-schedule plays, got that dog in him. Okay, what's J.J. McCarthy's skill set? Athletic, got a straight arm, got a strong arm. You know, when you ask him to, he can make plays off-schedule. All right, well, what's Michael Penix's skill set? Athletic, great pocket passer, ran a 4.46 at his pro day. Like, what are we talking about here, people? All these guys have the same skill sets. They're just all a little bit better in certain aspects. You know what I'm saying? So for Jaden, unless you're just simply saying we're both black, all these guys are very similar to myself. Colin Kaepernick, Russell Wilson, Randall Cunningham, Michael Vick, Lamar Jackson, Jalen Hurts, Kyler Murray. We're all in that same boat of athletic dual threat slash triple threat quarterbacks who can beat you with their arm, their legs, and their mind. I just think I'm not this guy that walks around like I'm the greatest thing since sliced bread. And I know that in the world today, that's popular, you know, be brash, be in your face, be I'm this, I'm that. Like, I think all these guys are better than I was. I watched Jaden Daniels 3 times this year. And I'm like, what? Did you see that throw? Like his pre-snap. You hear I say pre-snap, post-snap, this. But his pre-snap analysis of the plays reflects in how he approaches the game post-snap. And I'm saying that to you because he uses a system called augmented reality. And he uses it to study the defense. And it pops up on the screen and goes away really fast. So he has to identify what it was. What was the coverage? What was the front? What was the defense? What was the blitz pattern? And it speeds up his reaction in game in real time. So when I say that, he goes from the traditional thought process. You go 1 to 2 to 3 to 4 to 5. And I said that to one of my coaches in Washington when I first got there because that's what I was taught through the draft process. You go 1 to 2 to 3 to 4 to 5. He's like, bro, if you go 1 to 5, you're getting sacked. And I'm like, that's a good point.
Makes sense.
So with Jaden, what I noticed was instead of going 1 through 5, because he would see the look, he would go 1 to 4. 2 to 3 to 4. Because he knew that 1 and 2 were dead based off the coverage. And that's an advantage when you as a quarterback can play ahead of the defense.
Yep.
And that's what I saw from him routinely. And it helps when you have Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas Jr. and a guy that not a lot of people are talking about, but Kyren Lacy. Like, they are really talented wide receivers, but somebody's got to throw them the ball. So I'm not going to punish Jaden for having those guys. I'm going to say, let me watch the tape, because he's going to have those guys in the NFL too. Every dude on that 1 through 5 and 1 through 6 on the NFL roster was that dog in high school. Mm-hmm. It was the man in college. You know what I'm saying? So when I watch Jaden play, I'll say this. You could take away his legs. Like, just take away the fact that he makes so many explosive run plays and just watch his passes. And he's still the second best quarterback in the draft. That, to me, is a testament to the type of quarterback that he is.
And you see the criticisms about, like, oh, well, he'll tuck it and he'll run too fast. Or, you know, sometimes he doesn't hit the backside dig consistently. But you don't know how these guys are being coached either. Like, there's also the point to make of, oh, you have a lot of receivers who can run in a straight line and beat a lot of people. And if he's getting single high, Do you want him to throw like over the middle, maybe into the post safety just to make you feel better? Like, no, sometimes you're just throwing to where, like you said, the open receiver is. And when it comes to that pre-snap process and going through the defense, absolutely, I think that's what makes him the most pro-ready quarterback in this class outside of Caleb Williams, is that ability to win before the snap, and then obviously all the physical talent as well. My biggest concern for him personally is the frame. Like, the arm strength a bit, just because if he comes to New England, the cold weather, like we saw in the last game of last season where Bailey Zappe, that they don't have the same arm. But just an example, Bailey Zappe cannot throw downfield when the wind is coming his way. As soon as the quarter switches and it went the other way, I'm like, he's going to throw the same thing and it's going to be fine. And it's a perfect pass. Like, those things do matter. So not as much the arm strength or the frame. And obviously he does have that, like, Wile E. Coyote kind of run style where he'll run into a dude and then all the coins fly out. I'm mixing animated metaphors here, but my point is, do you think the frame is something that is a legitimate concern at the NFL level? Not only, obviously, if he does reel in some of the running stuff and kind of put himself in harm's way, but also just because you see so many times guys get hurt in the pocket. The narrative is always that, oh, the athletic quarterback, they're going to get hurt if they scramble. Most guys, like Randall Cunningham, Lamar Jackson, these guys get hurt when they're inside the pocket. So how much does that concern you? Because, I mean, God made him the way he is. There's nothing he can do about that.
Yeah, nothing about his frame concerns me, because I saw Jaden Daniels when he was at Arizona State. He is not the same build that he was at Arizona State. Mm. Right? He's and it's funny. People make fun of the way you say it, but he's thicker. He's thicker now than he was at Arizona State. Mm-hmm. Naturally, as men, the older we get, the thicker we get. Mm-hmm. Okay, so he's 23. He's 23, and he's going to continue to grow into his frame. So that doesn't worry me, and I think that he's not going to keep running in the hits. Right, I've talked to him about it. Okay. You know, I didn't slide very well, and then by the time I started to try to slide, I had an knee brace on in 2013, and it's like, that's getting messed up. Now I can't slide, because if I slide, I'm going to sit out for five plays because they're taking all the grass out of my knee brace. But for him, I'm not afraid of his frame. What's the difference in his frame and Drake May's frame? Because people me making it seem like Drake May out there built like a bodybuilder or something. Like, Drake May is a tall, slender frame, mm-hmm. similar to Jaden's. Jaden is smaller. I think he weighs 10 pounds less. But both of those guys can easily grow and put on 10 to 15 more pounds. It doesn't have to be muscle. Like, you look at Patrick Mahomes, like, would anybody mistake Patrick Mahomes for like a fitness model? No. But he's flexible. He has good weight on him to protect himself. Those guys can easily develop that. If you go into this thing thinking because these guys are mobile and athletic that they're going to get hurt outside the pocket, then you don't watch football. Football is a 100% injury rate. All positions. Tom Brady was not a scrambler, and he tore his ACL. Yep. Okay? Joe Burrow has been hurt multiple times. Injuries is just something that guys have to deal with. You want to minimize the opportunities to get hurt, but I don't think his frame is necessarily a problem. People said that Lamar's frame was probably going to be a problem when he got to the NFL. He's been okay. He got one of the biggest contracts in league history. So I'm not afraid of him getting hurt. As a team, put him in position to be successful, and he picks his spots. Like, he's not running every single play. Mm-hmm. He's trying to throw most of the time, but when he runs, he's super dynamic at it.
You mentioned Drake May. So move on to him. Honestly, the Jaden Daniels, I'm definitely seeing things differently personally. So thank you for that. Now with Drake May, he's really been my QB2 in this class. Like, I think the upside is just so high with him. But honestly, I started charting where, like, it's easy when you just watch through. Sometimes the good stuff can kind of stick in your head and the bad stuff. It's like, all right, you know, that was that. Then I started charting and I'm like, okay, like, I'm being honest. He's very inconsistent, especially last season. Then you go back to 2022, it's a little bit better. You know, obviously coaching change might have something to do with that. The footwork seemed a little bit more consistent. So I'm curious from your perspective, when you look at where his footwork is kind of now, where he's got, you know, the narrow base, the slow heel clicky, all the, you know, buzzwords, all that fun stuff. But then if he comes to New England, he's going into a West Coast style offense with Alex Van Pelt, where he's got his own style of footwork that he's going to drill into this guy. Do you think that the issues with his mechanics are things that are reasonably fixable, And if so, what would your expectations be maybe, you know, throughout his first season, just to set some kind of bar so people understand what to realistically expect?
Yeah, I think with Drake May, I'm doing a breakdown tape for all these guys. So mm-hmm. I posted a 7-minute one of Penix earlier. I'm about to post one of JJ and then post one of Bo later today. Drake, I'll post tomorrow. And I didn't mention this in the video, but as you were talking, I'm playing back plays that I've seen from all the film that I've watched of Drake May. And he, in my opinion, does the opposite of what coaches in the NFL coach you to do. Mm-hmm. Not in a bad way. Drake doesn't read with his feet. Yeah. He reads with his eyes.
Right.
Okay, so because he's doing that, sometimes his feet are out of whack, mm-hmm. which can then affect his accuracy at times. But it's not, like, so egregious that it's not fixable, mm-hmm. okay? So I give Drake May grace, because if you were to look at Troy Aikman's feet when he was with the Cowboys, right, one of all-time great Cowboys, and you compared him in his prime to the way that Aaron Rodgers' feet are in his prime, you'd be like, okay, well, one of these guys is wrong, right? Because A-Rod's footwork is completely different than Aikman's footwork. Mm-hmm. But it worked for that guy.
Right.
So I'm interested more so for Drake, not to say, oh, man, it's people all over the place. It's like, well, people said the same thing about Aaron Rodgers, and now everyone's copying him because they see that it works. I want to see if what Drake does is what's best for him. So when he gets into the NFL and he gets that NFL coaching, do they realize that, okay, if we try to clean up his feet to make him look like someone else, is that really what's best for him? Mm-hmm. That's what I'm more interested in, because everyone will tell you, hey, if your feet are off, your accuracy is off. And sometimes that's true. Sometimes that's true. But it's really more so about having a consistent throwing base mm-hmm. and getting him through on those throws. Well, you can't step into a throw. And for me, that's what I see when I watch Drake. I'm like, okay, he was a little high on that one. But right. Was it his feet, or was it because, like, something else mechanical was a little off? Because he's reading with his eyes to where it's supposed to be a three-step drop, and he takes a one rocker. And now he's sitting there hopping. Mm-hmm. Waiting for a drop to go. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Makes the throw. So I've been very cautious to be, like, hella critical of Drake, because I've seen – I called his Clemson game this year, and he missed more throws in that Clemson game than any other game throughout the season, even more than the NC State game. Mm-hmm. And I was coming from the NC State game, when I watched it back, impressed by Drake May.
Really?
And the reason I came away impressed is this man missed a bunch of throws early in the game, and I actually detailed this on ESPN. He missed a throw, boom, to his left. Mm-hmm. Early in the game, he threw the dirt. You know what I'm talking about.
I know exactly what you're talking about. Yep.
Yeah. It was bad.
Yeah.
He came back later in the game and threw a touchdown in the same direction. Mm-hmm. Ball to his left, threw a touchdown to his
tight end. Yep. Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So, like, I was impressed by that, because it was like, okay, you had a bad throw. You know who else had some bad throws? Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Eli Manning, Aaron mm-hmm. Rodgers, John Elway. They all had bad throws, but you got to play the next play. Mm-hmm. And he did that. And honestly, like, I watched the NC State game, and if I was a scout or a coach, a head coach, a GM, a owner, and I saw how he reacted in that game to the adversity he was facing, I would feel more comfortable drafting him. He never quit in that game. They were down big. He never quit. If you remember, he actually went out late in the game. He got hurt for a series. If you don't, that's okay. I've watched every single snap of all these quarterbacks. He went out the series before the last series of the game with an injury. Came back in. They had no chance of winning. He came back in and finished the game. Now, he threw an interception that bounced off his guy's hands. But it was the thought of, this is a meaningless game for him. He's leaving. He's going to live as his last game.
Yeah.
And he still finished it because he wanted to be there for his brother. So I came away impressed with the mentality, because the skill is there. Mm. I wouldn't try to change who Drake May is. I would just try to make him consistent. Hey, fam, if you're going to do that little thing with your feet, do it every time. Because if you do it every time, you'll be more consistent because your body will get used to that. Right. We just can't have you doing it this way one time and this way another time and this way another time. Mm-hmm. Don't be so critical to say, he's got to be this. Because mm-hmm. I tell you right now, nobody throws like Lamar Jackson.
Right.
Nobody has the same footwork. Nobody has the same throwing motion. But he has his own, and he's mastered it. And that's what I want to see from Drake. What is his throwing motion, you know?
Absolutely. The consistency is the biggest part of it. Again, even 2022, it just looks the same more often than it did in 2023. And you talk about the way he fought at the end of games. I forget which game it is, but you know the 4th-and-21 where he's getting hit in a blowout and then just lets that thing rip down the side? Like, there, he had a few touchdowns in blowout games where it's like they have no chance of coming back. And there's no quit in this guy. And you saw it at his pro day where he had some bad throws early on and then was like, no, let me go back and do those again. So I completely agree. I like the resilience he's shown consistently. I guess the only other thing I'm just curious with you about is that in terms of processing, I felt like sometimes he would just get through his reads so fast where he's going to one side, back to the other side, then he's coming back. Stuff like that. Maybe some of the superheroics where I think in terms of ball protection, for the most part, like he's got a turnover-worthy play rate under 2%. I think that generally he does a good job protecting the ball. There are some times where he can make plays, but then it also backfires where he tries to make a throw last second and then he gets stripped or he tries to throw across his body. Do you think that's just something with experience? Like he'll figure out what he can and can't do, especially with the processing once he gets more calm and experienced. But you don't want to take away some of those superheroics because those are the things that make him special.
Yeah, 100%. You want to talk about the experience. I was a 4-year starter in college, right? So I started as a freshman. Then I tore my ACL as a sophomore. Not a lot of people will remember that because they remember the Heisman. I actually thought my career was over my sophomore year. So I started as a freshman, started as a sophomore, then came back as a redshirt sophomore, started again, and then started as a redshirt junior. I had 4 years, really three years and three games of like full-on college football to get better. If you saw me when I was a freshman All-American, but I was a different player as a freshman than I was as a redshirt junior. I ran for 280 yards in a game as a freshman against Washington State. I probably gave myself 50 more yards, but it was a lot. It was over 200 yards. You know, as the years go on, the yards just keep adding up. You know what I'm saying?
Every day, it's another couple yards.
I went for like 230 whatever yards in that game. I never touched that again in my college career. By the time I was a redshirt junior, I was throwing for 300, 400 yards a game. Mm-hmm. Right? That was the progression. If Drake May had gone back for another year, would he have been a better player? Yes. You talked about the heroics. Pit game. When he's doing his own read. Mm-hmm. Receiver releases down the sideline. Corner comes off the receiver. And he throws it to the receiver with his left hand. Yep. Okay? That's incredible. You don't do that unless you're comfortable with who you are as a player and know that, hey, I got this in my bag of tricks.
Yep.
But when you talk about the reads, we talked about Jaden and how he was going from – skipping from 1 to 2 and going straight to 3 to 4,
mm-hmm.
he was doing that because he started 56 games in college.
Right.
Mm-hmm. He knew when to skip. Sometimes with Drake, he would skip when he didn't need to skip.
Right.
When he needed to go 1 to 2 to 3, he would go 2 to 3 to 4 because he was thinking, oh, I remember this look. And it would sometimes catch him off guard. There's nothing wrong with that. You live and you learn. The more you play the game, the better you get at the game. So if you see him scanning across the field and going back, maybe he missed something on that particular play. But that doesn't mean he's a bad player. It doesn't mean that – like I saw some of his interceptions in that NC State game. I think he threw 3 picks. 2 of them weren't even his fault.
Yeah.
And I'm like, but you look at the box score and they're like, oh, my gosh. He was terrible that game. And I'm watching the game. I'm like, he really wasn't that bad, guys. Like, you are gassing this for likes or whatever. So, for Drake, I do think it's something that over the course of time he can improve. I still think he needs to sit a year.
Mm-hmm.
I think if he plays, he will play well. I've heard some people say that if he plays, he won't play very well. And it'll be catastrophic. That's not true.
No.
He's too talented.
Yeah.
Way too talented to not play well.
Mm-hmm.
But will it be what's best for him? I don't think so. I think he needs that Patrick Mahomes year. Sit down, learn NFL offense, learn how to make throws in the NFL. Tyreek Hill once told me, that the first time he saw Patrick Mahomes play in practice, he said, that guy will never be a starter. You're talking about Patrick Mahomes, a guy who's the second greatest quarterback in NFL history already and chasing Tom Brady's GOAT status of 7 rings. And Tyreek Hill said he'd never start in the NFL. You got to give guys time to develop. Drake May needs that year to where he can develop and not have any stress or whatever and truly get in bed with the team that he's going to be with.
I agree. And then even you think of the processing, like if this guy's getting man coverage, he's trying to throw down the sideline. If he's getting covered too, he's hitting the seam, he's hitting the honey hole. It's like, this is not a guy who doesn't know how to read a defense. It's actually incredible what he can process. And like, oh, the heat's coming from over here. He'll immediately take the snap and start drifting because he knows pressure's coming. Like, it's not a dude who's not like QB savvy. It's more that, no, sometimes you just make mistakes and sometimes you got to learn from those mistakes.
You're talking about that throw against Clemson. I know what you're talking about. Yep. They had the play action pass. His tight end in the wing spot ended up chipping and going to the flat and left number 17 to blitz him. Drake May drops back, drifts to the right, throws it off his back foot and hits a crosser for a touchdown. I know that because I watched it, but I also broke it down in the tape. So it's like he has those types of plays. You're like, you can't coach that.
Exactly.
He has a feel for the game. It's not like he's just a robot out there and he's strong arm, fast. I can't process. That's not what he's doing. He is processing. He's just a young player. Give him a chance to develop, and I think whatever team drafts him, they'll be very happy with him.
Instincts are always one of those words where you say and it sounds like, you know, oh, you're just throwing that out there. But really, man, with him, he's not just a bundle of traits. And talk about that Clemson game and interceptions aren't his fault. I think he had 2 game-sealing interceptions where the receiver literally just didn't come back for the ball. And it's like, well, and that's on him? The guy stopped, and the defender's the only one who came back for it. So we can move on from Drake. I could talk about him for another hour, but let's move on to some other guys. The stars of your Dragon Ball Z comp breakdown. So J.J. McCarthy, Michael Penix Jr. People are talking about J.J. You know, with the Patriots, I told the Patriots are going to either take Drake, take J.J., or they're going to trade back. If they trade back, now it's been reported they might take Michael Penix Jr. J.J. is a guy, we've already touched on it. He's got traits, like the leadership abilities there. That's the first thing everyone talks about. His athleticism is definitely underrated. But, of course, even with the pedigree, he is unproven. He just didn't get a ton of opportunities. Michael Penix Jr., other end of that spectrum, where he had a lot of opportunities, showed a lot of his talent. Also, to be fair, an underrated athlete, but someone, because of the injuries and the age, probably going to be taken a little bit later. So please feel free to throw in your Dragon Ball Z comps. But at the same time, do you think each of these guys are worthy of top 10 picks like some people have them pegged as at this point?
Yeah, I actually do. And I know people will say about me like, man, you can't find anything negative about these guys. It's like, no, I just choose to show you guys what they do great on my platforms.
Right.
Like you asked me about Drake May. I told you about Drake May. I told you about some of his shortcomings. But on my platform, I don't need to tell you that. You got enough people out there telling you how bad these guys are.
Yes.
I'm going to tell you what they do great. So for JJ, I said he's Android 17. I'm a Dragon Ball Z nerd. I love it. Android 17, when he first shows up, is very he's very undisciplined. He's an undisciplined, disciplined fighter, right? He just, oh, look. There's someone over there. I'm going to go whip their ass. And he goes and whips them. I want to be stronger than that guy. And he just does stuff on a whim, right? JJ was the same way when he first got to Michigan. I want to make every throw, every run, every big play, every single play. Mm-hmm. Well, by the time he got to his junior year, he was no longer doing that. He was making the right play. He was making the right throw. And I felt like that progression between him and Android 17 is what you saw in Dragon Ball Z, where 17 eventually becomes a park ranger. And he's like the most efficient park ranger of all time. And he's like, you know, toying with bad guys, making sure that the animals are all safe. And then he saves the world a couple times, right? When you need them, they show up. 4-7 plus, J.J. McCarthy has the best QBR in the entire college football. So for me, I've heard people say, oh, he was carried by the team. He was not carried by that team. Yes, I know he didn't like throw a pass in the second half of one of the games. I get it. You just mad because you couldn't win the game like he won the game. But for what they asked him to do, he did it to perfection. And he has the skill set to do more. They just didn't ask him to do it. So that, to me, I'm not going to hold that against JJ. I like him as a guy. You hear all the leadership stuff, but sometimes people say it so much that it almost sounds like they're coping for his ability. Yeah. And I hate that. No one's coping for his ability. He has extreme ability. Does he have the same arm as some of the other guys? No, but he's got plenty enough arm. And this is all respect to him as well. He ain't got a Chad Pennington arm. Okay? He's got more than enough arm. It's just that, you know, Caleb Williams is ridiculous, and Michael Penix has the strongest arm in the draft. It is ridiculous. What it is. So for Penix, I said Penix is Piccolo. And it's not just because he's black. Everyone that follows Dragon Ball Z knows that the Namekians are black, and they blew up. I can't believe it. I'm gonna stop. But I was upset about that. I ain't gonna lie. I was pretty upset. But Piccolo was the guy in Dragon Ball Z who went from being the villain to being the hero, right? Michael Penix Jr. had 4 season-ending injuries at Indiana before he went to Washington. So not necessarily the villain, but kind of forgotten about. He can't do it. Piccolo, he can't save the earth. He's a villain. Nobody wants that guy. They just needed someone to believe in him, right? So I know it sounds sentimental, but Kalen DeBoer believed in Michael Penix Jr., and he brought him to Washington, and they made magic there. Goku believed in Piccolo, and when he did that special beam cannon against Raditz and basically killed both of them, it was because Goku knew that Piccolo could save the earth, and he could make it happen. So they both got a special beam cannon, and I've said this time and time again about Michael Penix. He is a lefty, but he throws it just right. I mean, I don't know if I've ever seen a guy make the kind of throws that he made on tape. The one that I'll mention is the Texas one. When he hit it was supposed to be like a fake toss. And I broke it down today, so everybody go check it out on Twitter. It was supposed to be like a fake toss to the running back, but Mike was so locked in, he didn't even do the fake toss because he saw the defense. So he kind of like did a little token fake in front of him, took a nice 1-2 rocker, and threw the ball like if the DB was in the throwing lane, it would have went through his chest. He threw it that hard. And I've never seen a guy be able to make throws 15, 20, 25, 30 yards down the field, like they're 5 yards away. Mm-hmm. And that to me is a special trait. I'll give you one other. I didn't break this in the tape, but he threw a touchdown pass 2 years ago to Wayne Tualapapa, which is one of my favorite names in all of college football at the time. Because Tualapapa, he scored a touchdown, and I said, "Who's your daddy now?" I do remember that. I enjoyed it. But he was running down the sideline. This is against Michigan State 2022. And he threw a back shoulder fade to Wayne Tualapapa. It was about 35 yards away. And he threw the ball so hard, I could hear it whistle from the booth.
The booth?
From the booth. You could whistle. I said, "Oh my God!" Wayne Tualapapa didn't have a choice but to catch it. That's how hard he threw it, and right on his face. If he didn't catch it, he'd probably be in the ER right now. You know what I'm saying? Like it was. I've never seen something like that. So for Penix, I've said this time and time again. Go through the numbers. Stats are like bikinis; they show you a lot, but they don't show you everything. But for Penix, look at his numbers. He threw the ball more than any quarterback in the country last year. Mm-hmm. So he had 36 touchdowns, I believe 9 interceptions. He had the most throws of any other quarterback. So he made the most decisions in the pass game. Mm-hmm. And he was still efficient. If he threw 36 touchdowns and 25 picks, we wouldn't be talking about him.
Right.
But they literally put the game on his shoulders every single week. And he delivered. That, to me, is a special type of player. That, to me, is a guy that I think NFL coaches, they want to have him because they know there's nothing that they can put on his shoulders that he won't be able to handle.
The more I think about McCarthy and Penix, honestly, they're very similar because also guys, like you said, when they're called upon, they make the play. And also, they talk about Penix and McCarthy, both guys where you talk about character first, but Penix is more because it's like this dude has ice in his veins. Like, he's not scared of anything. He's a great leader. And you already know in crunch time, like, he'll make that throw to Roma Dunze. That you got your ex one-on-one. Is he going to win? He knows who he's got. He throws to him. And he doesn't care if it's downfield. He makes a tough throw. And he completes it more often than not.
And the safety was there.
Yep.
The safety was cheating to Rome Badunza. You're talking about the Oregon game. I know you're talking about. Yeah. He was cheating to Rome, and Mike said, man, that don't matter. You know what I'm saying? Like, he just beat him with the throw, and I just think it, I know it sounds like a Michael Penix love fest, but I just have a great appreciation for guys that do things that I just haven't seen before. And the way he throws the ball is like, man, that's special. That is really, that's next level. And I know we all talk about Mahomes and what he does. Mahomes is just creative and can throw from any platform. This guy has an arm that is like once in a generation type of arm. So that's saying a lot.
Last thing on these guys, I feel like another similarity, both of them get kind of criticism for their lack of touch. You know, it's more like they throw like that javelin where it's kind of getting on you real quick. I'm curious, is that something you can still make work in the NFL? Is that something you can develop? Penix has plenty of experience, but is that something you can add to your game, or is it just something that, hey, it's how they throw, just make it work?
No, I do think he has touch. Like, I know Kaepernick, when he came out, that was a knock on Cap. Like, everything he threw was a million miles an hour. I don't think Penix is the same way. I think we get a little enamored with some of the throws we were just talking about. So it makes you feel like, damn, is he throwing like that all the time? Like, he's really not. He's not throwing a 5-yard shallow like he's throwing a 30-yard post. So I think he does have touch. He has missed some throws 15 yards and underneath because he's trying to, like, get it there. But that's any quarterback. Again, I think for him, it's just a matter of getting used to the NFL structure. And he has more than enough arm. I kind of went through this when I was even going up from high school to college to the NFL. As you go up levels, you can throw the ball a little bit harder, not because you're stronger, but because the guys you're throwing to are better. So I think for him, it's going to naturally level itself out because the guys that he's throwing to will be better receivers, even though he has some dogs. I mean, all puns intended, the Huskies, he has some dogs at Washington. But I think he'll be fine from that standpoint, and he'll realize those windows in the NFL are tighter. He doesn't need to muster more strength. He has that already. It's just more about getting used to the timing and rhythm in the NFL.
Last thing. I appreciate you taking all this time, man. It really means a lot. We talked about all these quarterbacks. Again, this is a Patriots podcast. So at that number 3 pick, what do you think the Patriots should do? Assuming, you know, Jaden Daniels is off the board and the decision is between May, JJ, Penix, and then a trade back potentially in that scenario. If you're the GM, what's your call?
If I'm the GM, okay, I'm not, but if I'm the GM, I trade out of the 3rd pick, and I trade out of it. I was just on ESPN today, and they asked me a similar question. Hey, what do you do at the 3rd pick? So I'm not a guy that just randomly says stuff. I said I would pick Drake May if he's the guy the team believes in.
Yep.
If Drake May is the guy that they want, draft him. Mm-hmm. You'll find your receiver. But you don't want to pass up on him and move back to get a receiver if he's the quarterback you want. All right? So that's what I said earlier today, and I stand by that. If I'm the GM, I'm trading out of the pick. And the reason is I know someone's going to come up and take Drake May or whoever they want at QB, but I'm going to be able to probably get my receiver and Michael Penix Jr. in the same draft. Mm-hmm. So that, to me, is very important. And I think Michael Penix is ready to play now. I don't think he needs to sit a year behind Jacoby Brissett. And if you get your number one receiver, your whole outlook on your season, it looks different now. Wherever Michael Penix Jr. goes, his receiving core will be the happiest receiving core in the draft. Because the man had 4 dogs at wide receiver. Romo Dunze, Jalen McMillan, Jalen Polk, Jeremy Bernard, every single one of them 8 at Washington. You know how hard that is to do? I had Kendall Wright, Terrence Williams, a guy named Tevin Reese who got drafted by the Bengals, and a guy named Lanier Sampson. And it was tough for me to get all 4 of them involved. You talking about he's got 3 guys that can get drafted, and Bernard might be a first-round pick next year or the year after, whenever he's eligible. He knows how to distribute the ball. He knows when to use his legs. And I think receivers are going to love playing with him. So that's what I would do. I'd trade back, get the receiver, and draft Michael Penix. and then off we go. Patriots should be a playoff team at a minimum, and mm-hmm. and I mean that. I think you're a playoff team at a minimum in year one, and then you get to build upon that after that.
Best case for a trade back I've heard. Great way to end the show. All right, Robert, once again, thank you for the time, man. Please remind the people where they can find you and what exciting stuff I know you got coming down the pipeline for draft week. It's here.
Yeah, I'm excited about the draft, man. Like, I never thought that I would do TV because of some of the negative connotations to the talking head deal. You know, we talk in the locker room, all this kind of that guy, but I'm truly having fun, and it's really because of the fans. So I want to say thank you, guys. I wouldn't have had a job or have a job right now if it wasn't for the fans. You can find me on all my social media channels at RG3, which is really just RGIII. Got to try to get those Roman numerals right? Got to honor my dad and my grandpa. But also at RG3, the ones, going to have main man Kool-Aid McKinstry on the show this week before the draft. Have some fun with that. You can find me in all those places. And on Twitter and all my other social channels, I'm going to be posting these breakdowns for the top 8 quarterbacks, right? And one of them will be a guy that people have kind of thrown away and haven't been talking about him because he's been hurt. But I think he could be another guy that not the steal of the draft. My steal of the draft is going to be Spencer Rattler. I think I'm going to break them all down, give you like real insight, not just like breeze through something or only do one play, give you multiple plays to show you what these guys can really do. So be in tune for that. And I'm going to post Bo Nix later today for the Dragon Ball Z comps, 3 more tomorrow and 2 more on Wednesday. So let's have some fun with it.
I can't wait to hear you set the record straight on Spencer Rattler. Dude is not getting enough love. I've been trying to say it. I get he's 6 feet tall. Is it scary? Yes, but he's an absolute baller. So once again, man, appreciate the time and appreciate you all as always for watching. Now take care of yourselves.